It's 88.5 KCSN Sky Daniels. Happy to welcome Jewel to the station. Welcome.
Hi, thanks.
It's great to have you here. As we prepared to have this conversation, there were so many things I'd want to discuss. You probably wouldn't make your show at the Palace tomorrow night in time, so I figured let's just start with something that you said, which really is a tremendous comment you made. As you were approaching the new record, you said, "I let go of genre, radio, current events, and clever strategies," which to me sounded like someone who understood, I'm going to make a record on my terms with total acceptance that this record's going to be what it's going to be. With all you've done and all you know, being able to, you know, clear the mind and soul of all that, it must have felt pretty good getting to that place.
Yeah, it was difficult to get to that place, actually. I wanted this record, Picking Up the Pieces, to be a bookends to my first album, Pieces of You. And you're doing it 20 years later after you know too much. So at 20, I didn't even know that there was a country division at labels, or that some labels had no country division, and that there are these very separated formats, and
right,
that rock is highly, you know, different promoters than pop. And it's just the business is set up in this very, I don't know, cubed manner,
yeah,
where everything's segregated. And I didn't know anything about that. I didn't know what singles were. I didn't know what tempo was. Like, I didn't know anything. I was just writing songs. So it was easy to make a record then, you know, I think I was 19 something. Without knowing those rules, because I didn't know them. I didn't have to forget them. But 20 years later, it was a trick to get all that out of your head, because you don't mean to, but you just start to absorb things like, you know, strategies and, oh, if this can have crossover appeal, and, oh, if I can reach a different demographic. And it's just a bunch of crap you don't need in your head. It doesn't help you make great art particularly. And it certainly wasn't going to help me make the type of art I was wanting to with this record. I don't know when it happened, but, you know, it's interesting. With time, you just start to become domesticated. You know, I think when we're young and there's just sort of this real cocky fire in us that kind of gets us through, and we don't know a lot, but that kind of,
you know, think we do.
Yeah, that swagger kind of gets you through, and a lot of raw, you know, willpower. And then you start to learn the structure. And I would never say I was a rule follower, because my career doesn't, you know, denote that. I probably did every left turn you can take. But still, some part of me became domesticated. Some, you know, some of those things still absorbed into me, and it made me safe in a way that I didn't want to be anymore. And I was going through writing the record, writing a book, and going through a divorce at the same time. So it was this very holistic, holographic experience of stripping every bit of artifice away and saying, who am I at my core?
Yeah.
What has always been the same about me? What are those underlying things? And getting rid of the rest.
You wake up to clothing like a hunter wears camouflage, hiding insecurity, hoping no one ever catches on. You like to read scientific magazines like Vanity Fair. There was a well-written article about serotonin in there. You keep the same company you think Coco kept too. Wear a bracelet on your wrist that says, what would Elvis do? You make snide comments in private, but in public, you're fashionably green. You're ironic, but not too proud to brag. You know what it really means. Oh, cynicism has begun to numb the pain, and fashion still works until you realize you're the same plain Jane. You have a rock hard body, but you only make love in the dark. Beneath painted lips, you're afraid to see what's really in your heart. You say cool things sounds like at least murder is interesting. Cause the worst crime a person can commit in life is to be boring. Oh, cynicism has begun to numb the pain. And fashion still works until you realize you're the same plain Jane. Oh, such a sweet face, just embrace the real you. You will see it's just lovely and more than enough to be loved. Yes, loved. Yes, loved. Oh, cynicism has begun to numb the pain, and fashion still works until you realize you're the same plain. What's wrong with plain old Jane? I kinda like plain Jane. I like plain Jane.
When I was 15, I moved out, and I knew statistically girls like me end up, you know, in a ditch or on drugs or with somebody abusive. I had an abusive background, and moving out at 15 doesn't typically bode well for anybody. So I knew if I wanted to beat those challenges, I had to use every bit of my intelligence, my wit, my creativity, anything at my, you know, any of my internal resources to try and change that outcome. And that's what writing always was for me. It was this process where I tried to study myself and say, you know, if it's nature versus nurture and I didn't like how I was nurtured, could I re-nurture myself? And that's what my writing's been. It's been me studying my nurture. How was I raised and how can I re-raise myself? So that's always been what my music's been. It led to a career, which certainly wasn't, I didn't intend for that to happen. I'm really blessed that it did, but my music's always been about that. I want to figure out how to be a satisfied, happy human. And if I wasn't taught that in my childhood, can you learn that? And is it a learnable skill?
Well, you did. As you talk about, and we will talk about your upbringing and your beginnings, you know, in a professional sense, but you did introduce yourself to the world and today in song with a pretty broad declaration of what you just expressed with who will save your soul. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was you saying hello to the world at large, at least. And it demonstrated and touched people that they saw that you were, in fact, seeking good purpose. When you play that song today, I always think that songs that end up changing someone's life, not only yours, but I'm sure many fans that you've spoken through the years, they have to have a certain anchoring presence in your life, do they not?
That song has one for me. You know, I was asking all these questions of myself. I've tried never to be dogmatic in music or tell people what to think. I'm constantly questioning, and I love to be part of that in a community. Who'll Save Your Soul is the first song I ever wrote. I wrote that when I was 16. Hoboing by train across the country and then hitchhiking through Mexico like all parents hope their children do one day. But it was my first time seeing...
Father in me was just like, ay, ay, ay.
But it was my first time seeing pop culture and seeing that we always want something else to save us, somebody else to save us, and what if it's up to us, you know, and those are still questions I ask myself.
For you on TV, they say they're better than you, and you agree. She says, hold my calls from beyond those cold brick walls. Says, come here, boy, there's nothing for free. Another burger, another hot dog, some fries. You wish him in the well, hope your health don't go to hell. Well, another doctor's bill, a lawyer's bill, another cute cheap thrill. You know you love him if you put him in your will. Try to bustle him, try to cuss some, and the cops want someone to bust down on Orleans Avenue. Oh, another day, another dollar, another more, another tower went up where the homeless had their homes. So we pray to his men a different God's house. There are flowers, but we call religion our friend. We're so worried about his saving our souls, have prayed that God will take his toll, that we forget to begin. But who will save your soul when it comes to the memories? And who will save your soul after all those lies that you told, boy? Some are stalking the kill. You got social security, but that will not pay your bills, cause there's addictions to feed. Oh, and our mouths to pay. So you bargain with the devil, say you're okay today. Say that you love them, take their money and run. Say it's been so sweet, but it would have one of those things. Those strings, those flings, those strings, those flings, those strings, those flings, those strings, those flings, the things, the things. To get on the streets, go right now and bust all your butts. Who will save your soul when it comes to the fall of the baby? Now, who will save your soul if you won't save your own? I say, who will
become a great advocate for affordable public housing because you dealt with a firsthand situation like that. Do you want to talk something about how that's become an overt concern of yours? Because I know that's one mm-hmm. that you like to let people know how you can help.
You know, I ended up homeless just, I had a boss. I was working in a computer warehouse. I wasn't a musician. I just was writing music as a hobby. And I was answering phones in a computer warehouse, and my boss propositioned me one day. And when I turned down his advances, he fired me without a paycheck. So I couldn't pay my rent, and I got kicked out of where I was living, and I didn't have enough saved up for a deposit on a new apartment. And I didn't think that was a big deal. I mean, I was raised in Alaska in a saddle barn with an outhouse, so living in your car in San Diego didn't seem that bad. And I was like, it's just going to be a couple of months. I'll get a job and I'll save up for a deposit. But I had bad kidneys and I kept getting sick a lot and I kept missing work and getting fired and didn't have medication, didn't have insurance, couldn't afford any of that, and almost died in the parking lot of an emergency room because they wouldn't see me, which I think is illegal. I don't even know how that happened, but I was really sick. It's hard to remember it, but I was dying of blood poisoning out in my car, throwing up all over myself. And luckily a doctor came out and gave me some sample antibiotics and saved my life. And then the car I was living in got stolen. And so it was just sort of this really vicious cycle. Yeah. I wasn't doing it to get famous. Like a lot of people have this misconception of like, I was starving for my music, you know, and it wasn't that. Like, after I was homeless, I was like, I used to sing in bars with my dad, and I knew you could make a couple hundred bucks, and I could probably sing for a couple hours versus hold down a whole job because of my kidneys. And so I was like, I got to start writing songs. And I just started writing about everything I was going through. I was shoplifting a lot. I was looking at this idea, finally, you know, I looked in the mirror and saw myself stealing a dress for $40. And I was like, when did I lose faith in myself? Like, when did I stop thinking I could earn $40? I'd moved out when I was 15. I had jobs. I put myself through school. I traveled and I was reduced to somebody that stole. I would say reduced myself to somebody that stole and somebody that, you know, I was agoraphobic. I had an intense fear of leaving, you know, either my car or the corner that I was on without thinking I'd be gripped by illness.
Wow.
I was paralyzed. And I remember I was like, I'm going to succumb. Like, I'm not going to make it out of this if I don't get really serious. And what does being a victim mean? Do I really think I'm a victim? Like, do I really think I can't earn $40? And I remembered something Buddha had said. I read a lot. And Buddha had said, happiness doesn't depend on who you are or what you have. It depends on what you think. And that's all I had left was my thoughts. I had no family, no money, no support group. I literally only had my thoughts. And so I challenged myself at that age to see if I could turn my life around one thought at a time. And I started writing songs about that and working my way out of it and was discovered and completely by accident. And then that first song I ever wrote, Who'll Save Your Soul, ended up, you know, being my first single, which was, you know, extraordinary. That stuff doesn't happen.
She stepped off of the boat to see flowers in his hat. The man she would marry was as hard as the mountains. She had his children in a log cabin. Soon I'd be another star in this family's constellation, in the land of the midnight sun, searching for gold. I am my father's daughter, he has his mother's eyes. I am the product of her sacrifice. I am the accumulation of the dreams of generations, and their stories live in me like holy water. I am my father's daughter. Daddy raised me in a log cabin, and he sang for me the songs his mother sang for him in honky-tonks and empty bars, just me and him and that old guitar. He passed on a legacy wrapped up in a melody that I carry on, searching for gold. I am my father's daughter, and I have his eyes. I am the product of his sacrifice. I am the accumulation of the dreams of generations, and their stories live in me like holy water. I am my father's daughter. Every time I step on stage and the music finds me, I don't need gold to remind me. I am my father's daughter. I have my grandma's eyes. I am the product of such sacrifice. I am the accumulation of the dreams of generations, and their stories live in me like holy water. I am my father's daughter. Oh, I am my father's daughter.
When you're getting ready to do a duet with Dolly Parton, the girl that was hoboing across America and hitchhiking and everything, that's got to be a little intimidating, isn't it? You know, to go in and say, wow, here we go. What was that like?
I'm such a Dolly fan. I finally worked up the nerve to ask her to be on the record, and I guess she'd read the lyrics of the song and liked it. And it was strange to have her on a song I wrote. You know, I have so much respect for her. She's such a great songwriter. So that was a tremendous honor. And then I was producing the record. So all of a sudden I found myself in the studio having Dolly sing on a song I wrote, and I was producing it. It was just freaking me out. But she was amazing. And, you know, she's such a pro that the wall could produce her. I mean, she doesn't need producing. It's not like I did anything but get to be there and got to see her sing up close. But she was just very professional and very witty, very sarcastic, very funny, you know, everything you'd hope that she would be. And for a girl that was raised in the woods with an outhouse, you know, Dolly was my hero and Loretta Lynn, because they were raised similarly to how I was. And more importantly than that, they were women who were unapologetic about being who they were. You know, Loretta and Dolly were so different, but so themselves. And I loved that. I loved that it gave me permission as a young girl to say, I don't have to apologize for who I am, and I'm going to experiment. And luckily, I was also mentored real early on by Bob Dylan, took me under his wing when I was probably 20 before my record broke, and Neil Young. And, you know, those two just really drilled it into my head of, like, you have to follow your music wherever it goes. And if it's a left turn, take a left turn as sharp as you can. And if it's a right turn, and if it's a straight line, only you know that. And that's the advice, you know, I really followed throughout my career.
Simplicity does not come easy when you're dreaming of being someone else. And grace, you see, is fleeting when you're bleeding your inner self. Have mercy on me, please. Have mercy on my knees. I'm being broken again and again. Now keep being broken until I remain open. But when you're locked away, fighting shadows, a constant battle, trying to feel safe when your own armor starts causing you to sink beneath its weight. Call for mercy, won't you please? Call for mercy, get on your knees. You're being broken again and again. You're keeping into it, cry till you crack. That's how the light gets in. Set your weapons on the ground until you're naked and trembling now. And when you think you can't stand anymore, give mercy.
Job well done today and always. So we want to thank you for coming
Thanks
by.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's been really, really a special day for us. I want to thank Jewel. I want to remind everyone, the new album, Picking Up the Pieces, and of course, at the Palace Theater, we want to encourage you to come on out tonight. Thank you for coming here today.
And the book, Never Broken.
And the book, Never Broken. See, look at you. Who can keep up with you?
Well, except I took 5 years off. Don't get me wrong.
Okay. Well,
it's time to work a little.
She won't give herself too much credit, but we will. The indefatigable Jewel. Thanks for coming by today.
Thank you.
You got it. It's 88.5 KCSN.